on Land Use for Wednesday, April 27, 2005. Committee will hear all three bills we have a work session scheduled for, but we'll change the schedule just a little bit. Move 3310 first, then 2704, and then 3135. So we'll open a work session on 3310, and we have some dash four amendments. And where is Linda? Would you come forward, please?
Yes, I see a dash three. Three. Is on the
dash three. Dash three, I'm sorry.
Oh. Okay.
3310. Wow, three Lindas. That's really something.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Linda Ludwig, League of Oregon Cities. Just to clarify, I'm sorry, we do have the dash three amendments for you today in House Bill 3310 that deals with periodic review. I've asked both Jim Brown, who's here formerly of the governor's office, to come up, as well as Rob Halliburton, DLCD staff,
who worked with
the interim committee on periodic review reform, to tell you we very much bless the dash three amendments. This was a great piece of consensus building legislation that we would like to see the committee move forward. And I would also like to take this time to thank Mr. John Dean Leaningham, who chaired this committee, who is the current chair of LCDC and did a phenomenal job moving forward the direction of this committee, moving what we did last session with Senate Bill 920 along its path into a more efficient periodic review for the future.
Jim?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Brown. I represented the governor's office on the periodic review task force. Like Linda said, I think it was an excellent process, and I think that the bill, the amendments that you have here do a good job of representing the consensus point that the committee arrived at.
Thank you, Jim.
Chair, members of the committee, again, I'm Rob Halliburton, and we were before you a couple weeks ago when this bill was first brought up, and we had expressed department support for the bill then, and I'd like to reiterate that today. There was one thing I wanted to call to the committee's attention in the dash three. There was one amendment that is not part of the committee's recommendation. It was an amendment to the statute that was brought forward at the department's request with the consent of the committee, and that is on page 7, lines 16 and 17. It has to do with continuance of LCDC hearings on appeal. It gives the commission a little bit more flexibility in continuing appeals. But just wanted to call that to your attention and reiterate the department support for the bill.
Thank you, Rob. Any questions? I realize that you just received these the dash threes, but this has, I think the print is still wet on these dash threes, so as is always the case here at this part of the session, do we have any questions? Representative Greenlight.
I see how it affects cities not in metro. How does it affect metro? I haven't gotten through. Does it affect the timetable for comprehensive review in metro?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, that is on page 3, line 17 through 20. A city with a population of more than 2,500 within a metropolitan planning organization.
I've got it. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other questions of our distinguished panel?
Mr. Chair, is Metro speaking on this bill or no?
We can ask Randy to come up if you'd like, Representative.
Well, maybe not, but
think I've got this bill straight. At one point, there was some potential conflict with Senate Bill 431. Have those issues been reconciled?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nolan, the language of 431 has actually been incorporated into the dash 3 amendments here.
Great, thank you.
Seeing no further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And I'll have, Lane, would you like to speak? As I know your agency was responsible for the task force, and I know we've had Rob here. And Randy, would you come up just to relieve any anxieties on behalf of the... Believe it or not, on the same page on something, which is nice.
Excellent leadership, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Lincoln Lane Shatterly, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. I think, Mr. Chair, it was you or somebody on the committee that asked if the amendments that you see before you implemented the recommendations of the committee, if the department would support the amendments, and indeed we do. As you heard from Linda, John Van Landingham, Chair of the Land Conservation and Development Commission, actually chaired the work group that was staffed by the department, and I was able to attend several of the meetings and would concur in the very positive comments that you have heard about this, and I'm pleased that we were able to take the legislative mandate from last session, in fact even sessions before that, and address the issues around periodic review, and we look forward to working with the cities in particular and the economic revitalization team and the other players, including Metro, in implementing the bill.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randy Tucker, Metro. I just took a look, and I've just seen it as well, but if you look at Section 10 and 11 on pages 16 through 18, that looks to me like Senate Bill 431, and it looks faithful to even the most recent amendment that I requested from the chair, actually, on Senate Bill 431 itself, which is the little bit in line 7 through 9 on page 18. So I think it's pretty up-to-date on where we should be, and obviously I think look at it word for word. My colleague Dick Benner has been a member of the, you know, involved in the entire process, is the original drafter on most of the Senate Bill 431 stuff, and his most recent information to me is incorporated here, so I think we're good.
Thanks, Linda.
Chair, if I may, just to offer one note, there was a minority report to the committee's recommendation that really would have maintained periodic review on a much more extensive basis for communities statewide. I think the department's position, at least mine personally, is that in the perfect world with resources and staffing available to do that, that would be the way to go. Periodic review is a way to make sure that communities are up to date with their comprehensive plans and able to take advantage of development opportunities that come their way. Given that that is a resource-intensive process, the reality is such that I think the direction the committee took was the appropriate one, and that was to put the resources where we're going to get the most bang for the buck, and that's what this represents.
Mr. Chair, I'd just add one more thing for the benefit of the rest of the committee, because you haven't heard Senate Bill 431, and we're just talking about it as though everyone knows what the heck it is. Let me just in 10 seconds tell you what it is. It's sort of a housekeeping bill that passed unanimously through the Senate, 29-0, I believe, that eliminates duplicate appeals of UGB expansions and other land use decisions, mostly UGB expansions. Basically, right now there's a situation that where you might have to appeal the same action to LUBA and to LCDC. And so this is an effort to eliminate that sort of irrational situation and to save everybody time and money and, just kind of clean up that process. So that's what, instead of speaking in shorthand, let's speak in English. And that's what Senate Bill 431 did. It came to the Senate, having been worked out with no opposition, just so you all know what we're talking about.
Any questions of the panel? Representative Greenwood.
Do you have a copy of the amendments in front of you, Lane? Can I ask you a question, or Linda? On page 10, there's a section on the whole middle of the page, actually, basically all of page 10 that's in bold, talks about about amending the comprehensive plan. Is that a complicated thing, the way it's required here for to amend the comprehensive plan in reaction to statutory requirements or a new goal or rule? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenwick, no, what the language here is trying to get at is using the periodic review process to add on to local jurisdictions' new requirements through the legislative process, as we've seen happen in the past. So instead of utilizing now the periodic review process, we are looking at doing that as an amendment here through a post-acknowledgement plan amendment process or a PAPA.
I see. And that's a relatively easy thing to do rather than, I mean, I see section 2 that says this isn't the role of periodic review. Is this amendment approach in section 1 there because that's relatively efficient to use? Is that the
correct answer? John, I'm ready to share with you. It's easier, much easier than doing a full periodic review. And that was the purpose, that was why we added that provision.
Thank you. If I may, it was the inclusion of amendments prospectively to be picked up in periodic review. That was one of the things that made periodic review ultimately labor intensive and often took communities in directions they would not otherwise have gone, having to address these new requirements instead of maybe some other things that they might have wanted to get at in periodic review. And so that was the sense of divorcing changes in the law from that periodic review process. And this is the alternative way then to see that those changes are actually implemented.
Thank you.
John, pass along our thanks to your task force.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Art, did you have any comment that you'd like to make?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lex Slack, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and I was involved in the work group on periodic review at this point. Not as much as I'd like to have been, I will have to tell you, given the pace of everything and especially involved in the legislative session at this point. But this is a good bill, and I would urge you to support it. It does provide us with looking at periodic review in a manner that I think is much more practical given where we are today, and divorces periodic review from the habit we have had of saying cities and counties need to address amendments to goals, statute, or rules as part of it, a part of the periodic review. So we've just piled tons of stuff there, and it's created the problem of taking years to create periodic review. A couple of other comments, Mr. Chair. One, I want to just put on the record that those cities and counties that are not required to do periodic review may ask the commission to undergo a periodic review at their own initiation. So it's an option because they may, at some point in time, a jurisdiction may want to go through periodic review to update its plan on a more comprehensive way, and so that option is still here. I think that's extremely valuable to especially counties in eastern Oregon, southern Oregon, and maybe the coast that are not going to be subject to periodic review as they have been in the past at this point. The other comment that I would make, Mr. Chair, is there was some concern about the involvement of the, at least on my part, of GERT, the governor's economic recovery team, in determining whether somebody should go through periodic review. I think the language that's in the bill that talks about with the agreement of cities and counties addresses the concern that I had initially. And so the bill with the dash threes is something that the Association of Oregon Counties can support. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Starr? Seeing none, thank you, Art.
Thank you.
Linda, in a session that at times has been most difficult for you, we congratulate you on pulling all of this together, and we congratulate all of the agencies and the people that were involved in putting this, and I consider this to be really good legislation today. We thank you for your efforts in making it possible and bringing it together.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, from all of us.
The Chair would look for a motion to add the dash threes to House Bill 3310.
Mr. Chair, I move we add the dash threes to House Bill 3310.
Representative Greenwich has moved the dash threes to House Bill 3310. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Greenwich?
Aye.
Nolan?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Gerard?
Chair votes aye. The dash threes are added to 3310. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3310 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Anderson has moved House Bill 3310 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Freeman?
Aye.
Nolan?
Yes.
Anderson?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair Gerard?
House Bill 3310, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And I guess since this was my bill, I get to carry it. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3310. And we'll open a work session on House Bill 2704. Sam?
House Bill 2704, we had a meeting, we've had three meetings already on this one. Last time there was a, you tabled this one over to Wednesday. And then what we have is a dash two. This is would require LCDC to review large urban parks. The amendments would define large urban parks to only be Portland's Forest Park and Blanche Creek watershed, and its scope has been significantly narrowed down from the original bill, which was started out as large urban parks or 1,000 acres or more, to just being this only one. It would require that the study be done, and then the report would come back to the legislature to make a determination, where the legislature would then make a determination on Forest Park being designated an area of statewide concern. There's been no actual designation of such a entity within 30 years, although there is a provision in the state code for that allowance. And I believe Representative Greenwich can address any of the other items in dash two, which I don't know if I've covered all of them.
Representative Greenwich.
We didn't move the dash ones. The dash two was last time, did we?
No, you did not.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm Mitch Greenwick, House District 43. Northwest Portland, including Forest Park and the Bulge Creek Watershed and all the way to North Plains. Wish we heard enough of in past years. The next two amendments are a set of amendments that were proposed and crafted by DLCD and Metro and City of Portland and Multnomah County. There's no opposition to the bill now. Thousand friends have no problem with it. Nobody has a problem with the bill. The bill very much narrows in scope the House Bill 2704 in several ways. One, it makes clear that it's only referring to Forest Park and its surrounding areas. Two, it takes away the biggest task that LCDC would have had under the original bill, and that has to do with creating a management plan. The items on line 14, 15, and 16 of the original bill to create a management plan for large urban park. It doesn't do anything like that. What it basically does is give DLCD and LCDC an opportunity to look at what this notion of an area of special state concern is, and to look at the extent to which the complex management plan, the way the planning for Forest Park is now being done, with a city park inside a larger park, with the city having some responsibility, Metro having responsibility, Multnomah County, and even Washington County, all having responsibility to the planet. And basically the job is to take a look at this and see whether the planning model that's going on for this area works, putting a state eye into the process as well as the local eye, and then look at what this thing that was put in place in SB 100, the area of state concern, is about, and whether there's some applicability of that designation to this area. There's no presupposition on that. This doesn't tend in that direction. It simply says, take a look at that and evaluate whether the regional framework plan and the applicable comprehensive plan preserve the national open space values of Forest Park, summarize the local, regional, and state programs that apply to Forest Park and its areas of influence, and the policies and measures that apply to identified natural and open space resources. There is this whole question of how Goal 5 is going to apply in the metro area. Metro has put off Goal 5 implementation for 12 years, I think, by statute. So there's no rush to judgment on any area, and I don't think anybody, public or private, is threatened by this attempt to look at the future, the next 100 years of Forest Park in a more systematic way. There might be other ways to deal with Forest Park. There may be some interest in thinking about how this might become a state park rather than a city park. There's all sorts of things, but none of that is in play in this bill. So I think we have it narrowed down to where it has a manageable fiscal, under $50,000, DLCD's fiscal on it, that the areas that are affected by it all feel comfortable, and there doesn't seem to be any public or private concern about it at the moment that I've been able to surface. So my request is that you adopt the dash twos and pass the bill on. The bill has a supplement referral to Ag and Natural Resources. I've talked to Chair Smith about it, and we'll talk further about it, and it seems like the proper step at this time to do so.
Any questions of Representative Greenwood?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Adams.
Thank you. Representative Greenwood, could you refresh my memory, since this is just a single issue with one park, why this comes with the state rather than just going before Metro?
Well, actually, Metro is looking at it, and there are ways that Metro might, in fact, pick it up. Metro is dealing with this question of the hard edge now, of what ought to be the urban boundary, dealing with the Willamette, north and south of Willamette, the Wilsonville issue, and they might pick this up. But my argument is that Forest Park is such an extraordinary resource that it really does transcend or impact the metropolitan area. People that visit Forest Park and use it come from all over the state. I think it's just time for the state to say, is there something special here that transcends the sort of local responsibility, and should the citizens of the state of Oregon have some interest in where the next 100 years of this quite extraordinary resource? You may remember that this is this park was looked at by the Olmsteads at the turn of the 20th century, when they looked at the Portland Park System, systematically talked about this. This was something Lewis and Clark described in his diaries coming up the Willamette to look at it. It is one of two places in the world where there are large mammal habitat inside the city limits. The other is Nairobi, Kenya. I mean, it has in many ways a very unique character, and I'm hoping that we can at least figure out whether we want to do this in a way that makes sense to the private citizens. The interesting thing is the park is there are private property as well as public property all intermixed. I live on Bulch Creek and understand the impact of that, and Forest Park is my vista. So this is something that just has some, I think, some transcendental value.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions of Representative Greenman?
I have a question.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenman, I just have a quick question. How many private property owners do you imagine in that two-mile area around Forest Park?
Hundreds.
Right. Follow-up? Have they been notified that we're doing
anything to notify them about? I mean, there isn't anything here that they are notified about all the Measure 5 stuff that goes on. They are notified about anything that's happening, but there's nothing that's happened that affects them in any kind of way, except perhaps the passage of Measure 37.
Thank you.
Yes, but they would have to be notified before there was any discussions. And we were all notified on Goal 5 stuff all along the way.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm told not to worry. Nothing's going to happen for a long time.
Yeah, we're here to help you. You're proposing a different way of looking at this park, and that makes me wonder whether you think something's broke with the way it's being managed now. Is there?
Yeah. It isn't that something's broke at the moment. I think you've done an extraordinary job, both the private interests and Friends of Forest Park and the city and the counties, in the last 100 years. You know, I think we've done a really good job of maintaining this natural resource and the city parks that attach to it. Some of the recent urban growth boundary expansions, which were done under the urbanization goals and not included under the natural resources goals, actually did tend to threaten particularly the wildlife corridors from the coastal mountains into Forest Park. I would have much rather the decisions could have been made, for example, on the parts in dispute in the appeals court right now, a couple of parcels in the Bethany area that took, I would say, perhaps unnecessarily into the urban growth boundaries some major habitat resources and some major wildlife access areas into the park. The park is a wooden park. We have cougars. You know, your district is probably within 2 miles of the boundaries of this. We have cougars, we have bear, we have wonderful herds of Roosevelt elk. I have deer eating my apples, which, since I'm not a commercial apple thing, I trim so they can get to them more easily. Although they don't need my help, I think, getting to them. And I think there are some decisions that are not made within the context, some planning decisions, within the context of the next 100-year future of the park. So what I would like is to make sure that as we make planning decisions, particularly with such things as urban growth boundary expansions, that they not be necessarily changed automatically because of this, but that this become one of the considerations as they think about those kind of planning decisions. It would be helpful for the city of Portland to get some help in being able to look at this beyond. I mean, it's quite a burden in a sense. They've done a fantastic job. Open new trailheads, just help with Friends of Forest Park to open a new entrance into the park. I just think it would be helpful to have a little higher level of attention to it. It's not seriously broken, if that's the question.
Follow up, Representative Newton.
At one point, I received communication from some people involved with Friends of Forest Park that they were concerned about this bill and thought that, in fact, it would have a different effect than you are hoping it to have that would be detrimental. Have you consulted with them on the Dash 2 amendments?
They have the Dash 2s, and I haven't heard any objection from them on that.
The Dash 2 amendments address their concerns?
Well, they have them, and I haven't heard any recent communication that they have any problem with them. I'm a member of their advisory board, and I'm involved with them, so I...
Thanks.
Any further questions of Representative Greenman? Seeing none, thank you, Representative.
Thank you,
we'll allow you time to come back around to this side.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out one thing.
I think was
clarification. The original area of influence was defined as being rural land that is within 2 miles of a large urban park. That is in the dash three proposed to be revised, so that would be area of influence means land that contributes to the natural and open space values of Forest Park, including wildlife and riparian corridors. So the reference to 2 miles apparently has been revised and deleted.
But that was an objection that the Metro staff had, and we deleted it at their request.
Chair would look for a motion on the dash two amendments. Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I move we move House Bill 2704 to the Ag and Natural Resources Committee.
We need the dash two amendments first.
I'm sorry. I move the dash two amendments of House Bill 2704.
And Representative Anderson has moved the dash twos into House Bill 2704. Any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll. Representative Anderson.
I move the House Bill 2704 as amended to the Ag and Natural Resources Committee without recommendation.
Representative Anderson has moved House Bill 2704 as amended to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee with no recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Ackerman?
Aye.
Greenlee?
Aye.
Nolan?
Yes.
Anderson?
Aye.
Smith?
Aye.
Sumner?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. House Bill 2704, as amended, is moved to the Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee with no recommendation. We will close the work session on House Bill 2704 and open a work session on House Bill 3135. Committee, this is a bill we heard quite some time ago. We have some dash, I believe, five amendments. So, Lisa Atkin, would you come forward? And I know Senator Ritzert's wife is here. I hate to introduce you as Senator Ritzert's wife. It's just, it just doesn't sound right, Gail. Would you come up forward, too, please? Gail Ritzert, who has been very much a part of this legislation. Lisa, we need to have you tell us about what the dash fives will do to this bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Excuse me.
That's okay. I'm sorry. I just want, there's a dash four here with us. Are we not?
Lisa, I'll let you explain. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Chair Gerard, and thank you,
Representative Smith.
Thank you, committee, and also for the co-sponsors on this bill who sit on this committee, Representative Ackerman and Representative Sumner, thank you. This is a really good bill, and I want to say that the amendments that you had before you, the dash fours and the dash fives, were developed specifically in response to the testimony given at the public hearing before you for this bill. So I'm really proud of these amendments because they address all the concerns that were raised. I think, a really sensible and straightforward fashion. So if you don't mind, and with your permission, I'll just kind of go through them. Is that the way we do it? I've never done this before, so.
And then we'll have some, if we have questions.
Okay. So on page 1, line 23, that amendment merely states what is currently in law, that a local government has the right to approve a land use decision for an energy facility, and that is currently as the law.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm sort of lost. Are you going through the dash fours now?
Dash fours, and I'm going to explain that one. There's only about a three-word difference between the dash fours and the fives, so can I explain that when I get to that moment?
Okay.
Is that a good way to do it? Thank you. Okay. So the dash fours, and then I'll explain what the difference is. Okay, so there are three ways an energy facility siting can get land use approval. One, as you see on page one, is that the local jurisdiction gives it land use approval because it complies with all the land use laws. So that's pretty simple.
On page 2, line 20, you see a second way an energy facility can receive land use approval, and that's if the local government recommends approval to the siting council, and the siting council moves forward with the approval. So that's...
Chair, I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble following. The numbers you're giving are the numbers not on the bill, but the numbers on the...
amendments.
Okay, so you're talking about the amendments... We'd ask for amendments. The first page is asked for is line 23, which referred to something in the bill. Is that what we're talking about now?
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm very much. And like I said, please guide me, Chair Gerard and Representative Green, because I've never introduced amendments before. Would it be best if I went from the bill to the amendment?
No, no. Or? I'll be fine.
Okay.
Just a little help.
Okay. Please, thank you. Alrighty. So on page 2 of the amendments, the dashboard amendments, you see there that public hearings could be held about the land use criteria, and then from those public hearings, the local government can make a recommendation or a report to the siting council recommending that the energy facility be approved for land use approval. That's pretty straightforward. Then on page 2 of the dashboard amendments, line 26, this deals with the special case that some facilities take up land in multiple jurisdictions. That was one of the, that was part of a testimony given by PG&E and PacifiCorp. What happens if a pipeline or a transmission line or a large wind project goes over multiple boundaries and takes up land in multiple jurisdictions? And that's an interesting and legitimate issue to raise. So amendments in dash 4 would say that for a pipeline or a transmission line or a wind power generation project, after the local jurisdiction holds their public hearings and makes a recommendation, the final decision rests with the Energy Facility Siting Council because it involves multiple jurisdictions. Here's where you see the difference between the Dash 4 and the Dash 5 amendments. On the Dash 5 amendments, the words "for a wind power generation project" are excluded on the Dash 5s, and that is the only difference between the Dash 4s and the Dash 5s. One has pipelines and transmission lines only, and the other one has pipeline, transmission line, and wind power generation project. Does that help clarify that? Okay. Now, those are the three instances where there's compliance with land use goals. What happens in the case that an exception has to be taken to a land use goal? So now I'm going to address that. If an exception has to be taken to a land use law or statewide planning goal, if you look on page 3, line 19 of the dash 4, or probably the dash 5 amendments as well, it says that the local government or the affected local government can hold public hearings and make a determination about the exception to the land use goals. And the siting council and the local government can concur, and then that land use exception would be taken. What if the local government and the siting council were at loggerheads with each other? What if they couldn't resolve the land use issues? If that is the case, then you'll see on page 4 a very sensible solution. On page 4 of the Dash 4 Amendments, line 9 through 17, it says if the local government and the Energy Facility Siting Council try their very best to resolve the land use differences, and they cannot resolve it, they cannot mitigate it, then the issue would go to binding arbitration. And this answered, again, one of the questions of what happens if the local jurisdiction can't agree. Could they possibly have what's being called veto power? And even though I don't think people want to have veto power, I think people work very hard to come to resolutions and to find ways to work things out just in case.
there is this in there that it could go to binding arbitration, and that would be by a state-licensed arbitration council. There's a word for it, but according to legislative council, we can't name an entity in an amendment. So it would be an arbitration council that's agreed upon.
Representative Greenwood.
Who would be the parties to the arbitration?
It would be the local government and the Energy Facility Siting Council. They couldn't agree on the land use.
Not the person who is bringing the application?
No. It has to do with the, at that point, there would be a determination by the local government, there would be a determination by the Siting Council, and then if the two were just couldn't see eye to eye, that's what would go to binding arbitration. Then, of course, there is the, if I'm going to jump and... There are contested hearings and the ability to appeal to the Supreme Court.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I have a question on that binding arbitration section. Do you have a time limit if they don't agree? Is there any time built into that? Or?
That's an excellent point, and no, there's not in this amendment, but that is an interesting and good point.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe an oversight.
Okay. Thanks. I can't think of examples where two government bodies go to binding arbitration. And that seems like a very... do you have some examples?
Chair Brad and Representative Gate. No, I don't. And this was recommended to try to address the fear that for some reason a local government would be unreasonable and put a, as I said, a veto power, and the attempt was to be reasonable here.
I guarantee you this Representative Greenwood would be one hell of a meeting. Arbitration.
Well, I wonder whether they have the ability to give up their decision power. It's much more tenable way would be to say, okay, it goes to X, DLCD, or LCDC, or somewhere. I suppose.
Mr. Chair?
I don't know why it's troubling me, but
Representative Miller.
I'm not aware of this particular circumstance, but local governments enter into contracts fairly regularly that include binding arbitration. So they do, under those circumstances, give up their authority to make an independent decision. They bind themselves to the decision of the arbiter. So it's possible. Whether it's wise, I'm not sure, but it's possible.
Representative Ackerman, do you have an opinion on this?
I know, or are they through? Or, I'm happy. I do have questions, but I...
Have you completed Ms. Ackerman's question?
There's one more amendment if you want me to walk through it, and I'd be happy to. Thank you, Chair Grant.
It's a lot of ground to cover in amendments that the committee had not seen before, so
right.
That's the reason we're...
And, yes. Okay. On page 6 of Dash 4's, line 25, section 9 there, this amendment to Bill 3135 would establish a task force whose job it would be to formulate recommendations for long-term regional energy planning as those policies relate and are relevant to energy facility siting. And this is a cross-the-board representation on this task force. It includes public utilities, investor-owned utilities, Department of Energy, non-governmental entities, the Northwest Power and Conservation Council. And I believe that this amendment addresses the issue of bringing our energy facility siting into good alignment with the state's energy policies and planning for how our state will move forward into the future. And so
we recognize that the bill itself cannot solve this problem, so, or not the problem, it cannot make these recommendations and policy decisions, so this allows for that to be, that discussion to be carried forth from here, and such a task force will report back to an interim legislative committee to propose legislation for the 2007 session. There should be no compensation for any members of the task force, and they will meet as called for by the Department of Energy. So thank you. I think I've covered them all, and I appreciate your patience with me, Chair Garak.
That's a all work and no play task force.
Absolutely.
Representative Ackerman, did you have questions?
We've got to wait till we get all we're done.
Ms. Witzit, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I just have a generalized statement regarding the bill. And I don't know if you want me to read it. It really doesn't have to do with the amendments as much as the overall bill.
No, that's fine.
Okay. Chairman Garak and members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to be here this afternoon. This is a good bill, and I urge you to support it. I'd like to clarify again that this bill will not affect already sited power generating plants, nor plants already in the process of being sited. ODE and FSEC presently have a total of 1,260 megawatt exempt generating capacity in Oregon. We, Oregon, presently also has 2,751 megawatt capacity that are within the jurisdiction of the Siting Council. An additional 2,514 megawatts have been approved for construction in Oregon but are not yet built. Oregon Department of Energy is presently considering another nearly 1,000 megawatts. The total of these is nearly 7,500 megawatts. We are simply asking that future consideration be given to allow the citizens of Oregon to have equal input into the siting process as FSEC does. Thank you.
Ms. Larkin, I think you and Ms. Witzit would be congratulated. You took a pretty narrowly focused bill that had a lot of opposition, and you worked very hard at amending it to broaden its scope and to address the issues. And that's the kind of action that gets things hopefully done here. So we thank you for those efforts. Now, any questions of our two guests? Representative Ackerman.
Yeah, so to either of you, on page one of the dashboard amendments at line 14, requiring that the facility meet recommended guidelines and for generation, conservation, consumption in the region. I assume these are guidelines by the Siting Council. But how do you define a region? I'm having a problem with that because in the traditional sense, I guess a utility would have a service area. Many of them will not, I think, under current configuration. So I don't know how you can analyze what the needs are for generation, conservation, and consumption in a region. What are we looking at?
We refer to region as the region that's defined by the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, which is the four Northwest states that share power, and also we must include California because we do purchase power from California and we also sell power to California. So to be realistic, one would need to acknowledge that. And if I have your permission, Chair Garak and Representative Ackerman, I wanted to point out that on page 7 of the dashboard amendments, line 15, it actually talks about how those guidelines are going to be formulated. This task force that is built into the amendments, line 14 and 15 say, recommend administrative rules to the department relating to the implementation of ORS 469.503, subsection 5. And that's exactly what you were just looking at, that subsection 5. So the formulation of guidelines that will take us into the future will be discussed and brought back to the legislature, but in place there are already guidelines.
Okay. Okay, I have a second question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ackerman.
When we started this project, the summary only mentioned that land use approval be obtained from the local government, and now we have this advisory committee can also do that same task. Is that correct?
Are you talking about the special advisory group?
Yes.
Yes, if I may answer that question, Chair Gordon, Representative Ackerman. The special advisory group is defined in the ORS as the local government. So in a sense, they're one and the same. It is defined that way.
Could you show me where that's defined like that?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Could you show me how that advisory group is a local government?
I don't have the book with me, but I did look it up with Legislative Council because we had the very same question, and I'm so sorry that I can't remember which number the statute is, but the special advisory group is defined as the impacted local government. And so, for example, if a facility was siting within a city limit, the special advisory group could be comprised of members from that city as well as from the county because it's the local government. If it was outside a city limit and in county land, it would be probably the county commissioners. So the definition is already built into the statutes and is accounts for the fact that it depends where the energy facility is looking to site, where they're hoping to site. Did that answer the question?
Well, I guess I'm concerned because I thought this came to us originally because of the covert power situation and the complaint of Lynn County commissioners that they did not have any input into the siting of that facility. And the way the bill was originally drafted, it required land use approval from local government. And I assume that meant the county commissioners in this instance. I'm wondering what our county commissioners would think if they felt they couldn't make that decision now, because it seems to me you have an alternative process for local approval.
Thank you, Chair Gerard and Representative Ackerman. The bill in its original form absolutely did give the siting decision to the local government. And these amendments addressed the criticism that such a law might give a local government veto power. And it is my hope that anyone who supports this bill is a reasonable person. I don't think power should be completely vested in a local government if that would seem to preclude reasonable options. And so I think that's why this bill and the amendments call for public hearings, fact-finding, public hearings at the local level, fact-finding at the local level, a report by the local government, which is also the special advisory group, and then a final determination if it does comply with land use laws, or a recommendation if it would require an exception, and then the two, the local and the state, have to work together.
I understand all that. I just want to make sure that the counties are in the loop with respect to the changes in providing this alternative means for site approval. And I don't see anybody here today, and I don't know if this was just generated recently by the Dash 4, Dash 5 amendments, and they have not signed off, or they haven't seen it, they haven't heard about it. I'm worried about that.
Chair Gerard and Representative Ackerman, Lane County did send a letter of support for the bill, and I have spoken with Commissioner Dwyer, and as I said, I think people want to be reasonable. And the other thing I wanted to mention was that you were so correct in that House Bill 3135 did grow out of the experiences of Lane County and Klamath County when they found out that they were not welcome to have public hearings. The local jurisdiction was not welcome to give recommendations, or that the manner in which the recommendations would be received was so very, very narrow. So that is part of the impetus for the bill, and we've tried to make this bill as reasonable and fair as possible.
Ms. Zarkin, has anyone in Lane County seen the dash fours and fives?
No, because just like before, I only received them when I arrived up here today at 1 o'clock. So
I'm not satisfied unless I am convinced that the counties that raised this issue have signed off on this, either on the dash fours or dash fives, which have kind of changed the decision-making process. We have another voice to be heard here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dave Stewart Smith. I'm the Energy Resources Assistant Director for the Department of Energy. I've just gotten the dash fours today as well, but by my reading of them, this does not change the definition of the special advisory group. And the special advisory group is defined as, in current statute, either the city council, if the facility is proposed within a city, or the county commission, if the facility is proposed outside of a city. So, and this does not change that. So the special advisory group is an existing statutory tool, and this just expands their responsibilities.
My point being, do the affected counties know that their role has been so expanded?
I don't know that.
This was a concern to me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ackerman, I don't know if the counties had a chance to see this, but I just wanted to make sure it was clear that special advisory group is a defined term, and these amendments to my reading of them do not change that defined term. So it is an expansion of the process, but it's not a different group. The special advisory group is not a different group to be set up. It would still be the county commission or a city council, depending on where the facility was proposed.
Does that answer your concern?
Oh, it doesn't.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Is it possible, I see this as a subsequent referral to the Environment Committee, is it possible to move it without the dash four and dash five amendments?
How would the bill sponsors feel about that? I think the questions have, Representative Ackerman has brought forth a good question in that regard. So we have an option of either moving the bill forward with the dash threes, and I'm not sure whether we already have the dash. Have we accepted the dash threes?
Mm-hmm.
No. No. Have we accepted any amendments?
No.
Okay.
No.
We have it.
You want threes, and you want the fours at the
time. Okay. Representative,
I think we could also continue the work session until I'm satisfied or we're satisfied that the affected counties are aware of these changes. As I read these dash four and five amendments, looks like they came up on April 27. I don't think everyone's on the loop on this one.
I think
solve our problem. If my county says fine, I'm signing off, I'll vote for it. But if they say they've got a problem, I feel uncomfortable.
Ms. Zarkin, would you mind coming back on Monday and in the interim period running these by the county commissioners in Lane County to make sure that they're okay with this, because it is Lane County is the one that's presently involved with a proposal.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gard and Representative Ackerman. I'd be happy to talk with them. Of course, we all know that this bill won't affect anything that's going on in Lane County with any potential power generation facility. But I'd be happy to speak with them because they do support this legislation. I'd be happy to report back on Monday.
Well, and that's our predicament, that the bill was brought forth by Lane and Klamath, essentially. And that while it doesn't affect the siting in their areas, nonetheless, the bill is constructed around what happened to those two counties. So in order to make sure that the bill is doing what it's supposed to do, correct the problems that were associated for those two counties, I personally would like to have those two counties' assurances that the bill does indeed offer the opportunities that I think you as the bill sponsor want the bill to have. So
how soon could you come back to this committee? Well, we can't do it on Friday because we don't have enough, we don't have a 48-hour notice here, so it would have to be Monday. So, Representative Greenwick.
Yeah, I'd also like to ask a couple of questions, if I may, on the way to that.
Okay.
I'd like to know, you have both 4 and 5, and you have the wind power in and not, what the thinking about that was, and we can handle that again on Monday, but I was curious about it. The other thing is we heard some rather strong opposition from some of the power companies. I wonder, does this make them more neutral on it? Are they happier with it in this form?
Chair Gillard, and thank you, Representative Greenwood, for your question. Of course, I can't speak for the power companies. I can only say that their testimony was listened to closely, and some of these amendments were made to address their concerns in a good faith effort to have a bill that, I know I've used this word before, but it's sensible. We're addressing certain things that might be considered broken in the energy siting process, and we want to do that in a way that makes sense and doesn't create more problems. So hopefully they'll be much happier.
And the 4 and the 5, the question of wind power in, wind power not in?
Yes, and that actually grows right out of your first question. That was an issue that was brought up by the power companies. Well, you know, we want to go be able to site pipelines and transmission lines because those are so important to the infrastructure of energy generation. And the dash fives, which are gas pipelines and transmission lines, directly address that. And there was concern from the renewable energy groups that a wind generation project also would cross over multiple jurisdictions, so it might have the same kinds of problems as pipelines and transmission lines. So thus you have that option if you want to make it possible for wind generation that crosses multiple jurisdictions to kind of have a little...
I did hear from Pacific Power the concern about wind generation.
It's not easy putting something like this together.
Amazing.
Do you have any objection to our continuing with this bill to Monday?
Of course not. Thank you, Chair Brown. I'm very pleased that it's continuing because I think it's a good discussion to have. And maybe I'll just put my foot in my mouth here, but the amendments for the arbitration, and as I explained to you, I haven't seen that one. I'm happy to explore that one further.
We are working on a time limit in that we only have about a week left to hear, a little over a week, to hear House bills in our committees. So whenever we try to do this last-minute amending, we are, especially if they're complex, and as complex as these are, it's probably not very good policy to try to move something forward without having the discussions that need to be had. So we will put this bill back on the agenda for Monday. As Sam mentioned, it does have a subsequent referral to the Environment Committee, whose chair is sitting to my left. So he's been able to know what's going on with this bill as we move it. And I would ask Representative Anderson, would you like us to do this, or do you care to do it? Or I would much prefer to move the bill out that we're all comfortable about it here. So we'll do that. We'll put, Sam, if you put this bill back up for Monday, it'll give us all a chance to look at the amendments. And you obviously need to address the question raised by Representative Ackerman. So very good. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3135, and seeing no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.